It's all about contrasts, I think. It's about going outside, doing things that are hard sometimes, and not always being comfortable. We did a cold baths, cold swimming outdoors. We did a plunge yesterday, actually, knowing that you're going to come back into the warmth of your home, and you appreciate that so much more when you've been cold and really uncomfortable. I think that's important for kids to experience as well, to realize that it can be uncomfortable and that's okay. You know, that I think that also fosters resilience to be out in so-called bad weather, harsh weather. Just the fact that you appreciate the indoors so much more, and that cup of hot chocolate and having some hygge after you come in. You wouldn't have felt that way if you hadn't been out and come back in with, you know, rosy cheeks and feeling a bit chilly. And so definitely contrasts, I think it's an important part of life.
That's Linda McGurk. She's a Swedish-American freelance journalist, blogger, and author of There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. Her book has inspired families and individuals all around the world to get outside regardless of the season. From her time growing up in Sweden to raising her daughters in both the United States and Scandinavia, she has found that a love and respect for the outdoors is essential when raising a family. Her book and her blog remind us all that the great outdoors is full of adventure and life lessons, and the only thing stopping us from experiencing it is ourselves. So travel with us to Sweden as we speak with Linda about why there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Grab a seat by the fire. This is the Homeschool Project Podcast. So we'd like to welcome Linda McGurk to the show. How are you?
I am great. Thank you.
Awesome. And you are in Sweden, right?
That is right. Yep. I moved back here about 3 years ago now, but I've lived in the U.S. for 15 years, both in Montana and Indiana. So, yes, I know the place pretty well.
Great. Well, it is. You are 6 hours ahead of us, so you are still. Mm-hmm. It is still January 1st. So, Happy New Year.
That's right.
Yeah. You too.
We usually start off with just an introduction, and if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and what you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Like I said, I've lived in the States for 15 years, but I was born and raised in Sweden. Moved over to the U.S. when I was in my 20s, after I met my then boyfriend and then husband. And we lived in Montana for a couple of years, and then for 13 years in Indiana, where I had my two children. They're now 9 and 12 years old, two girls. And then I moved back here to Sweden about 3 years ago, and I work as a writer, mostly copywriting, but also PR as a PR manager. But I'm also an author, written one book, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, and I've got another one in the works as well. So, in addition to all the work stuff, obviously, I'm a big fan of outdoor life and just being out in nature. That's kind of my passion and what my books are about. So
yeah, that's why we had you on. We saw your book, and it's kind of everything I've been wanting to talk about on our show. And like last winter, we had a like don't let the winter blues get you down episode, but when I found your book, I was like, we have to have her on. Like, this is exactly what we need to encourage families to just get out there and embrace all of it. So really excited that you agreed to come on the show with us.
Yeah. And I think the timing is good too. I've noticed, you know, this fall and winter, there's just been such a need for inspiration and ideas to get outside, because with so many activities being canceled and people more or less being forced to, you know, to see each other outside or to do things, you know, with the kids outside. I've noticed, you know, I've had a lot of requests from people who are wanting to know, you know, my tips for motivating yourself for getting out and so forth. So I think this pandemic has really sort of made for a big shift in the way people think about winter and, you know, being outside and so forth. So yeah, so definitely strange times that we're living in, but it's also a good opportunity to talk about these things.
Yes, agree. Mm-hmm. Well, I just completed your book, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. I did the audio version because I am an audiobook girl. Works with me. And
nothing wrong with that.
he's your book guy.
we listened together though. I did an audiobook this time with her.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your book and then what brought you to write it?
Yeah, so like I said, it's called There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. And I was motivated to write it after my first daughter was born. Obviously, you know, having grown up in Sweden and then moving to the US was a big change. But in some ways, you know, I still felt pretty much in like at home in Montana. Montana is pretty similar to Sweden in a lot of ways, a lot of, you know, big outdoor culture and so forth. And then I moved to Indiana and it was almost like a bigger shift moving from Montana to Indiana than it had been to move from Sweden to Montana. And as a foreigner, you don't think of the U.S. being so diverse in terms of the different states having such different cultures. But so there I was, you know, raising my first daughter in rural Indiana. And I noticed, I mean, there were some big differences in the way, you know, in the culture. So for example, in the wintertime, I noticed that people didn't go outside much. And actually any time of the year, I noticed, you know, people were just not out and about, usually just moving around with a car, or I just didn't see people out walking much at all. And then in the winter, you know, they're all kind of outdoor activity just kind of ground to a halt. And there I was with a newborn in February, and I was used to being outside all the time. So I did what I'd always done. You know, I bundled her up and I took her out in the stroller and walked around. And then when she got a little bigger and she started, you know, going to sitters for a couple of days a week, I walked her there in her stroller. And the reactions I got just kind of baffled me. People would stop me and offer me rides because they thought I was out in the cold, you know, because I didn't have a car. Or, and, you know, when I said I'm just out and, you know, I just enjoy the fresh air and I think it's good for my baby, it was like they were so surprised. And so that made me think that, hey, there's the story here somewhere that I gotta tell. I figured just having my perspective from having grown up in Sweden, I thought it would make for a unique stories. And I knew there was a big interest in the U.S. for these stories. You know, we've had, at the time there had been this one book about French parenting. I can't think of the name right now, but Pamela Druckerman, Bringing Up Bebe. So that was a huge hit. And I thought, well, you know, nobody's written anything about Scandinavian parenting, so I think it's about time. And then after that, it seems like the whole Scandinavian culture thing with hygge and everything, it just kind of exploded. And it became like this huge trend in the US. So I think it was a good timing. But yeah, that's the background to it. I wanted to tell my story and just sort of give a different perspective on what it can be like to actually enjoy the outdoors all year round in any type of weather.
Yeah. And your book, like you had said, when we were conversing in emails, definitely covers all different types of topics. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not necessarily just about embracing the winter or the harsh
right.
weather. But I loved it. And one of the things that I found interesting is what you started to bring up, which was the base behind you actually being inspired to write it, which is just how amazing it is that you can, where you live can impact the way people view culture. And I love how you brought up yourself being a foreigner that, yes, even within one country, like the United States, you could have two different states that see the outdoors completely different, or even two different cities see the outdoors completely differently. And we've moved around because we're a military family. So we have even experienced how people see it. And I think this is the first time that we lived in an area where outdoor culture is embraced, because we live in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have been embracing the winter, getting out there in the cold, no matter what we're trying, no matter the temperatures, and even if it's raining, and there's people out there as well. I mean, they're out there in the rain, they're jogging, they're skiing, snowshoeing, all that. So being that you know, saw those different areas, you've already talked a little bit about those differences. Say that over in Scandinavia, it's typical that they may bring their infants out in their strollers in temperatures as cold as about 15 degrees Fahrenheit. And these are the things that I'm like, it's amazing when you just think it's all about where you live can impact how everybody views it.
It's culture. It's definitely culture. And I mean, in Scandinavia, we're raised from the get-go with this belief that nature is really good for you. Being outside is good for you. This is sort of hammered into us from when we're very young. So we have this expectations on nature that it is going to be, that is going to have these sort of healing properties. You know, so of course we pass it on to our children because that's how we were raised and that's what we believe is good for them. And, the research now confirms that as well. The research is catching up. Before the 80s, there was very little known about the health benefits of nature. The few researchers that were sort of worked on it in the 80s, they were almost like ridiculed. But I know a lot of people here, at least, you know, they've felt instinctively that that it is good to be out in the fresh air. And now with, I'm thinking of COVID too. I just saw a study the other day showing that you're 19 times more likely to contract COVID in an indoor setting than when you're outside. And it's like that with any, you know, any virus or bacteria. Typically, transmission is a lot more likely inside because there are more surfaces that you touch and there's more, I mean, the air is contained in a whole different way. And so there's definitely that health aspect and so many other aspects as well. I just wanted to mention too, you know, like I said, like you said too, my book covers a lot of different aspects and not just the nature part. But another thing that was very striking to me when my daughters got older and they started preschool was that there's a difference in culture when it comes to play and outdoor play in particular, but mainly that there's this. There's a much higher expectation on academic skills on young children in the U.S., whereas in Scandinavia, we focus more on really just letting the kids play, preferably outside, you know, as much as possible, but that they have, that we allow this sort of space, these years up until they start kindergarten, first grade, there are just not a lot of expectations on kids to excel academically. You know, if whatever they do, obviously there are a lot of educational activities and, you know, at preschool and so forth, but it's very child directed and where the preschool teachers act more like co-discoverers or they discover nature with the children and so forth. So that was another big difference that I noticed early on. And that one was hard for me to swallow. I didn't want to see my four-year-old, you know, come home with worksheets. I just didn't think that was age appropriate. And so that was another another difference as well. And same there, as far as in the US, you find all sorts of parenting cultures, educational traditions. I mean, it runs the gamut. You've got homeschooling, of course, and there's all these different directions. Charlotte Mason, there's Waldorf, you know, in Sweden and Scandinavia, it's a lot more, okay, you send your kids to preschool, it's kind of the same, most people do kind of the same thing, it's more aligned. So there are a lot of different traditions in the US, which makes it interesting. By where I lived, there was just not a lot of options. And that's, you know, unfortunately, I think that's the case for a lot of families. You know, there are a lot of the private schools that have more of a nature focus are unfortunately very expensive as well.
Well, since you raised your daughters in both the United States and now 3 years in Sweden, right?
Yeah.
About 3 years. Can you tell us a little bit of the difference that you've seen in them going to school here in like traditional setting where, like you said, academics are just pushed and pushed and a natural love for the outdoors would only really come from the family, not from school. Right. And then you move back to Sweden and you said it, where it's kind of embedded in the school system.
Yeah. So what, yeah. And I should explain that about my book too, because what it does is, what I did was I moved back to Sweden for about 6 months when the kids were, they were 5 and 8, I think. No, 4 and 7 at the time. Just because I wanted to try it and see, you know, see what it would do. And to see if Sweden was the same too as it was when I grew up, because you know, things changed there too. And obviously I hadn't lived in Sweden for a long time. So I enrolled them in Swedish preschool and school respectively. And you know what, I think what the most amazing thing was, I mean, that I felt was that all of a sudden, you know, the pressure was kind of not all on me. I had the support of the school and preschool. There are all sorts of, you know, activities, you know, they went to scouts, which was all outdoors. My parents, grandparents, the kids' grandparents, and all the adults in the kids' near, what you call it, circle were sort of on board. There was this mutual agreement that, you know, of course the kids are best off when they play outside. So in the healthcare system too, you know, doctors recommend it and all that. So it's kind of amazing because you just get another, you know, a different effect of it, I think, when it's on all levels, because otherwise it's easy for the kids to dismiss it, just like, okay, well, you know, it's what mom says, but like, you know, how that goes. They don't always think that their parents are the wisest, but then, and not only that, but also this sort of culture of outdoor play meant that the other kids expected to play outside. And so I noticed in my kids that as their friends were outside, my kids automatically sort of gravitated toward outdoor play as well in a way that they hadn't in the US, because usually I was the one, you know, dragging them out and doing my best, mm-hmm. Activating them. But there's just nothing that compares. I mean, at least once the kids reach a certain age, of course, there's nothing that quite compares, I think, to having that sort of group dynamic of other kids to play with outside and having the freedom to explore and do these things sort of on their own. And that was another difference that I noticed, that in the US there was more this expectation that either the parents or another caregiver sort of had to constantly watch the children, whereas in Sweden we tend to let the kids roam and sort of do their thing, you know, once they're a certain age or so, but much more emphasis on letting them develop their own games, come up with their own rules. and so forth. So that I think it was really good for them, and it made me want to come back too.
Was it challenging that time, like after you went for the 6 months for your girls, then to be those amount of years back in the American culture to try to continue to like expose them to the outdoors? Was it that much more challenging, you feel?
Yeah, after we got back to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. I think the hardest part was, I mean, I still kept doing my thing mm-hmm. at home, but I think the hardest part was trying to reconcile my views with the school. And then I had a very hard time with the fact that there was so little recess.
Yes.
And the older they got, the less recess there was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, towards the higher grades, there's no recess at all. They just go from one class to another. And I just, yeah. And they would spend all day inside. And I just did not think that was healthy. So, I mean, I tried to work with the school the best I could and, you know, come with suggestions and so forth. But it's hard when you're a minority, in terms of like your values and your views, because you become that parent sort of always has the differing opinion on everything. And
here she comes again.
Yeah. So I just didn't get, you know, a lot of response, and I figured, you know, I realized this is probably not going to change. And so I had that sort of difficult decision of, okay, so do we keep doing this or do we try something else? And that's, you know, part of why I mean, there were many reasons why I ended up moving back, but, you know, that was one contributing factor for sure. Yeah.
Now, do you think that's a regional issue that you were dealing with? Because no offense to anyone that's listening from Indiana, but it's not known as like the outdoor mecca of the United States, right?
Right, right.
So if you were still living in Montana, do you think you would have dealt with the same issues?
I think it would have, might have been a little different. From what I have friends still in Montana, and, you know, they raise kids there. And I know that there's a, maybe not necessarily that the school system is very different, but they do send the kids out for recess, even, you know, in colder temperatures than they do in Indiana. And that's just, and I've noticed this, you know, talking to people from Florida, anywhere from Florida to Montana, and then you realize how big a span there is for what is considered inclement weather. I mean, in Florida, that line could be at 50 degrees or 55. In Montana, you know, it's a much, much lower than that. Because otherwise, you know, I think it's hard to, enjoy living in Montana if you can't stand, you know, some cold. And they, I think, you know, yeah, the kids are outside more. But also, I think a lot of people move to Montana and other states that have an active outdoor culture because that's what they like to do. So it's kind of a self-selection.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the Pacific Northwest, I think in particular, it's a big draw for people who like the outdoors. And so that, I think, that affects the whole, you know, the politics and the city planning and the culture and everything. When you have more people that are on board for the same things, I think that makes a huge difference. Yeah.
So it's funny you say that, because we live outside of Cleveland, Ohio, which most people would not ever think that it was like an outdoor city, but the entire city is basically planned around a string of metro parks.
Wow.
And so anywhere you live in the vicinity of Cleveland, you could probably get to a metro park within 5 to 10 minutes, a different metro
That's
park.
Great. Yeah, that's
and great. They're almost all connected, and it's called the Emerald Necklace.
Yeah.
Because it's like a U-shaped underneath the city. And it's actually why we chose to move here, because we came to visit. And the first thing we did was go to some metro parks, and they're beautiful. They're not like city parks. Mm-hmm. Some of them are, but they are like rivers and creeks and hills, mm-hmm. and they're beautiful. And it's mm-hmm. why we came here, because you could tell that the culture of the city was based around the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And it was such a draw for us. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to just bring this up because I wanted to embarrass Anita's sister while we're doing this. So you said the difference between living in Florida, what they would consider cold weather. So we used to live in Florida.
Yeah.
And so if you live there, when the weather hits like 50 degrees, the girls start bringing out like the scarves and the boots with the fur in it. And the park is, and if you've ever lived anywhere else, you're looking around and you're like, what's happening right now? Putting these clothes on. I'm sweating. I know you're sweating underneath those, but we also lived in New Mexico for a while, and they came out to visit for the first time, and not knowing what cold really was. We lived up in the mountains, and her sister came out, and we took her up to the ski valley, and she wore like these Florida boots, I would say, you know, like something you'd wear in Florida, not like in really actual cold weather.
Yeah.
No, they were cowboy boots.
Cowboy boots. I'm sorry. and she ended up with like her feet on the vents of the heater in the car, like barefoot. I'll say she was crying. I'll say because her feet hurt so bad.
A grown woman.
Oh no.
But it is like, that's because we've gotten the chance to move around so much, you see the difference between when people live in certain areas and the culture, the mentality of what is considered cold, what's considered like crummy weather. Uh-huh. Up here in Ohio, we get a ton of gray overcast days in the winter.
Yeah.
Same
and so
as here.
If you let that keep you inside, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's the same here. And actually, we have a lot of rain in the winter. I mean, a lot of people think of Scandinavia as being just super cold, but because of the Gulf Stream and now also, climate change, like our winters are getting to be pretty mild. So, a lot of rain, think Pacific Northwest. And so you just gotta really have that sort of, I think, that internal motivation, or it's going to be very hard to get out.
Yes.
But it's interesting. It's cool to hear that about Cleveland. I actually think I've read about that. I think Cleveland has, when they ranked cities for their sort of greenness or whatever, green space, I think Cleveland has kind of, I think Cleveland has aced a few of those rankings, because it sounds familiar now that you say it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is so important because, I mean, let's face it, the majority of people already live in cities, and I don't think that's going to change. So we have to bring more nature into our cities, make them more green so that people can get the benefits of, the health benefits of being outside and not just being in traffic. You need to have some oasis where you can get away from the traffic and the noise and that a little bit, and at least, have a little more, have some more wild spaces. And I think cities that are sort of in the vanguard with this will actually reap the benefits as younger people, hopefully value those types of environments and will want to live there. I think it can be a competitive advantage for cities who actually do that.
Absolutely.
Create that green space.
Mm. Yes, I agree. We, like you said, with COVID, one of the downfalls for us, but it's a great thing overall for people, is that these parks are now getting crowded because everybody is flocking to be outside.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's a beautiful thing. We did like the peace and quiet before, but I'm a selfish act here, but that and the same, like everybody's on their bicycles out in the paths. They have paved paths everywhere for people to cycle through. They have another project coming up where they're going to try to bridge different towns together through their biking system. And you can tell people are, I really do feel that, like you said, those like-minded people are moving to areas where cities have built that up for sure.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because we were outside yesterday. It was New Year's Eve. usually in Sweden, you know, I mean, nature is so abundant here, and we're a sparsely populated country. You're just never, it's just never crowded in nature. But we, so we decided to, you know, bring a picnic and some hot dogs, and we were going to grill out, go on this hike around a lake nearby, because, you know, outside is the safest place to hang out right now. And so we were meeting up with friends, and oh my gosh, like, I've never seen that trail so crowded in my life. Of course, everybody had the same idea, with it being New Year's Eve too, that, okay, we're going to see friends. Well, we better be outside. And so this great trail became this hot spot, and I mean, we could hardly even find a place to, like, all the spaces for all the grills were taken. So wow. We had to make like our own little new like little campfire, because mm-hmm. everything was just taken, and I've just never really experienced that in Sweden before. It's nuts. So yeah, it's good and bad, but I think that really highlights the need for these public green spaces, and that we need more of them, not less.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know how the system works there, but the other reason that we love the idea of that is we already pay taxes to the city no matter where we live. At least when you move to a city like this, you see your tax money at work for a good purpose. And that yes. was cool too. Like they push a lot of tax money into keeping those green spaces and having those areas for people and families to go be outdoors. And it's awesome.
Yeah. And all the nature centers, they have tons of free classes for kids and families. Mm. It's amazing. Like all the time. I mean, before COVID, that's changed a little bit now, but before, I mean, all the time. And even for homeschooling families, they offer all nature courses. It's amazing.
Yeah. They employ a bunch of naturalists and they run courses for the kids, and you could just show up and it's an hour long, you know, nature study at one of the parks. They have a farm park where it's a working farm, and the kids can see how they, you know, milk cows and herding dogs and raise pigs. It's so cool. And you're right. You can see the healthy mindset when people are out doing those activities rather than, you know, being stuck on a couch all winter or any time of the year, really.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Now, you mentioned, I hope I don't butcher it, free loose leaf in your book quite a bit. Can you describe its meaning and how it applies to the Scandinavian culture?
Yeah, so free luftsleeve, you did pretty good. it literally translates to like free air life or fresh air life. And it's a tradition that goes back almost, I'd say the word was first used almost 200 years ago. But it really became a thing a little later. It was kind of a reaction against the Industrial Revolution and like the whole industrialism. And, you know, then the Romantic era came after that. And with that, people started to sort of idealize nature. And also, at least here in Scandinavia, after the Second World War, people started having, you know, they got more vacation time, and so they had more free time, and the government saw an opportunity there actually to push for more outdoor recreation as a way to improve public health, because they recognized the health benefits. And so that's when, you know, the first national park started to appear. And but also this whole idea that being outside every day is good for you. And friluftsliv, what makes it a little different from outdoor recreation, because it's not a literal translation, because outdoor recreation can pretty much be, I mean, it could be any activity that you do outside, right? Friluftsliv is more of a, I would say, like slow nature. It's more about being outside in nature for the sake of it, and to really get that sort of close connection with nature. And it can be very simple, the idea is that you shouldn't need a ton of money or gear to do it. It doesn't involve any sort of motorized vehicles. It can just be like a walk in the neighborhood park, or, you know, backpacking for a few days if you want to. I mean, that obviously requires more gear, but in its simplest form, it can really just be going outside, maybe, you know, bird watching, canoeing, or any sort of quiet activity that just sort of puts you in this connection with nature. And here, I mean, we're raised with it. We're, you know, it's passed down from generation to generation, and kids learn about it from early on. You know, you go, you sort of adapt it to the seasons as well. So in the winter time, a lot of people go cross country skiing if you have snow. In the spring and summer, it's more about hiking, in the fall as well. So it's just a really simple way to learn about nature, and it's experiential learning. So it's not, you know, primarily about, it's not about like reading a book, and then, you know, learning that way. It's more about going out there, making up a fire and learning, how to whittle and, like doing real things in nature. So that's actually what my next book is going to be about. I'm going to delve deeper into that subject.
Love that.
Yeah. I like your point that it doesn't have to be complicated to be in the outdoors, because mm-hmm. for people who spend a lot of time in the outdoors, if somebody who hasn't and thinks about getting out there, if you were to walk into a sporting goods store, you would assume mm-hmm. that being outdoors is very expensive. And yeah. I think it keeps a lot of people from doing it, because they think they need all these things to do that. And right. I think it stinks, because they try, you know, the commercialism and everything, they try to make you think you have to have this and have to have that to go out and just go for a hike with your family. Yeah. And it can be very simple and very cheap. And I hope that never, you know, keeps anybody from doing that, that hasn't done it before. That's, I think that's a really great point, that it can be very simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And, cause I get this question a lot too, about access to nature and how it's not, it can be very uneven depending on, like your social economic class and everything. It is harder. And I know it was an issue at my kid's school, you know, having the right, like having winter clothes and so forth. And so I always try to stress that, you know, you don't have to buy more gear than you can afford. Like it is at any time, I think it is a good investment, like good clothes so you can get outside, but you don't have to have like the latest and greatest. My kids have they've gotten by with a lot of hand-me-downs from, you know, from friends and family. You can find a lot of stuff in thrift stores. I mean, a lot of the old school gear, like old backpacks and stuff, is still just fine today. And there are also groups, like Facebook groups and so forth, where you can, you know, buy used gear online. Kids, a lot of times they don't have their gear, you know, long enough to really wear it out. So, yeah. So there's, yeah.
That's been, when we moved here, that was the first thing. I was like, they're going to keep growing, so we're just going to go to a consignment shop and get their winter yeah. gear, and it's perfectly yeah. fine. And yeah. more than half the cost of if you had gone to a store and gotten it. And
they were, yeah.
I'm sorry. I said that backwards. But yeah, they were yeah. great. So no, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Now I know that outdoor education is highly valued over there. And you spoke of this character, Moulet. Did I say Moulet, that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Can you speak about Moulet and how it is incorporated into the Swedish culture.
Yeah. So Mulle is kind of he's an imaginary creature. I would call him a forest troll. He's got this sort of spiky red or blue hair, greenish blue. He is a character that the Swedish Outdoor Association created in the 50s because I think they recognized the need for some sort of imaginary creature that could talk to children about caring about the environment, because they needed a fun way to relate to nature, not just some adult sitting there and telling them what to do and not to do, right? So I think that was really clever. You know, Mulle, he meets children where they are. He uses songs and games and stories to talk about different phenomena in nature. So, you know, there are different stories about, for example, the, you know, water life or the forest and so forth. And so the purpose is just to teach the children about the values of the outdoor ethics, like, you know, don't disturb and don't destroy, but in a fun way. And usually Mulle is, like, there are different kids groups, there are groups for different ages of children, and it's something that they usually do. It's the Outdoor Association that runs these groups. So it's not part of regular school, but pretty much any child that grows up in Sweden comes into contact with Mulle at some point in their life. It's very, he's there, because these groups are pretty common. And I think, you know, a lot of kids, they just really enjoy it. I think it's a great way to teach them about being responsible and sort of fostering this sort of stewardship, because ultimately that's what we want too. We don't just want the kids to be out in nature for their own sake, but also because we want them to connect with nature and so that they will want to care for nature when they get older. I mean, I think that's what I see as the ultimate purpose. You know, even nature gives us so much, and so much healing and so forth, but we must not forget to give back as well. And I think Mulle teaches that in a sort of a non-preachy way. So I think that's good. And different, it's not just a storybook creature or character either, but adults at, for example, at preschools and so forth, they dress up as Mulle. So Mulle is not like one single person. It's like all these different, leaders of these different outdoor groups, and it's preschool teachers and all kinds of people. You know, they just put on this little wig and they get into character as Mulle. So it's a really good thing.
It is. I love that. They're getting kids excited from the start for the outdoors and for respect of the outdoors, which, like you said, it is really important. And we see that with our kids because we are such an outdoor family. We already see that respect of nature growing inside of them. Now, I did want to go back to the title of your book. There's no such thing as bad weather, because this is a very popular Scandinavian phrase, correct?
Yes.
So if you could speak about that phrase, and then also maybe after you explain what it means to your culture, if you have if there was a reason why you chose that title, if there's a message you want to personally give out to others.
Right. So yeah, like you said, it's just an old Scandinavian saying, and the full saying actually goes, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Mm-hmm. But my publisher, and that's originally what I wanted for the title, my publisher was worried that people were going to think it was a book about clothes. So they advised me to cut it a little bit. But essentially it's just one of these things that, like, if you've grown up in Sweden, you've heard this, you know, if I've heard it once, I've heard it a million times. It's like, my parents have told me, have said it to me, like preschool teachers, most adults that have come in, that kids come in contact with, sort of use this as a way to instill this sort of, instill it into children that we go outside every day, no matter the weather. And it's a way to looking, it's a way of looking, I think, brightly at what the outdoors offers, you know, all year round. It's also related to, you know, dressing for the weather. Yeah. So it's like saying, basically saying, if kids don't want to go outside, it's like, well, you know, they're complaining about the weather. It's like, well, there's no such thing as bad weather. And then they have no comeback to that. It's like, cause you just tell them, well, we got to dress for the weather and it's, you know, no problem then. So of course it's like one of those sort of half truths. Cause obviously there is, I mean, sometimes it would be dangerous to be outside. You know, if there's thunder, hurricane, you've certainly got, I think, more extreme weather over there. So yeah, so sometimes people will get a little, you know, upset about it. And they're like, well, there is such a thing as bad weather. And I'm like, yeah, I realize that, but it's a saying, you know, don't take it literally. It's meant to inspire. It's not literal, but it's just a way to getting kids to think more positively about being outside. And also as a parent, like I find it too very motivating to think about that, because there are days when I struggle too. I don't always like jump out there cheery. It's not always like sunshine and roses, you know, when it's pouring down and the wind is just beating against the window. Yeah, like I don't feel like going outside either. But then I keep, it's like for me, it's like a mantra. So it's okay. Then the weather is like this. Then I just have to pick these clothes to have a good time outside. So it's just sort of instilling that kind of thinking into children early that, okay, we got to think about, you know, what kind of weather it is, how are we going to dress to have a good time outside. That's basically it. I think that answered the first part of the question. I forgot what the second part was.
Second one, was there a reason why you chose that to be your title? Was there a message that you're hoping to bring? Which right. I think you kind of answered that too.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a catchy phrase. So I thought it would be, like a catchy title. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, even though the book spans a lot of different topics, I think that's probably the theme that sort of runs throughout the book. It sums it up in a good way, I think. Yeah.
Now do you, with your own family, which is what we do you incorporate the great things that occur after going out in nasty weather? Like, so we'll go out in really cold weather, or we did a polar bear plunge a couple weeks ago into Lake
Erie,
and it was really cold. But the kids wanted to do it because they saw some other people doing it one weekend. So we all went and we jumped in December, and it was great. It was a great experience. But what's even better is when you get to come home and get the fire going and take a hot shower and have some tea or hot chocolate or something like that. So
yes.
They already realize that. They get excited to go out, but they also get excited for what happens after being in crummy weather. Do you do that?
Yes. I agree 100% with that. It's all about contrasts, I think. Right. It's about going outside, doing things that are hard sometimes, and not always being comfortable. We did cold swimming outdoors. We did a plunge yesterday, actually, knowing that you're going to come back into the warmth of your home, and you appreciate that so much more when you've been cold and really uncomfortable. I think that's important for kids to experience as well, to realize that can be uncomfortable and that's okay. You know, that I think that also fosters resilience to be out in so-called bad weather or harsh weather. Just the fact that you appreciate the indoors so much more, and that cup of hot chocolate and having some hygge after you come in. You wouldn't have felt that way if you hadn't been out and come back in with, you know, rosy cheeks and feeling a bit chilly. And so definitely contrasts. I think it's an important part of life.
Yes. I actually chase that feeling. Like it's almost addictive to me. Like,
yeah.
I love going out and like hiking in the rain or, you know, in a cold day, because I can't wait to come home and like take a hot shower.
Yeah.
And I'm also the type of person who I can't like sit down and watch TV very often or for very long, or I just can't sit for very long, period. However, when I get done with a long day like that, I can. Like, I'm okay with myself doing it. Like, it's almost like I earned it. When I come home,
yes,
I'm like, okay, now I can sit and take a break, and I can read, read or watch a movie with the kids if that's what they want to do, but it's okay now that we did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. I feel like, you know, if I'm outside for a few hours, then I'm fine with wedging out on the couch, which I have a hard time with otherwise. And that's another thing too, you know, being outdoors, you know, you mentioned focus and that, but another of the benefits, you know, with children who have a hard time sitting still inside and have a hard time concentrating, when they are allowed to be outside and play actively and being, you know, moving around, they do so much better too. Once they come back inside, they're able to focus better as well. So it works for both children and adults, I think.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like I had said earlier that we had lived in like different regions. So we lived in Florida. And so this mentality of like, there's no such thing as bad weather can translate to all seasons, because you could have that extreme heat and then find ways to be comfortable. We still went out in the trails in that awful humidity and being eaten alive by insects. But you know, we would go either early morning or in the evening if it was like a super hot day, and then you dressed appropriately with like the long sleeve light wear. So I love how that can really translate. I mean, it doesn't just have to be for those of us who live through actual winters. Feel like that's also why I just loved your book, because it's just finding those ways to embrace the season altogether. And you just quickly mentioned again another pronunciation, hygge. And some people listening may not know what that is, and I just think it's such a beautiful way to embrace the season. So if you could explain what that is and how you incorporate it, I guess, in your own life.
Yeah, so hygge is actually, that's a Danish word, but we have it in all the Scandinavian countries. We just call it, you know, something different in each country. It's a way to create coziness, togetherness. It has no direct translation, but it can be indoors or outdoors. It's sort of creating this feeling of togetherness. For example, I mean, the classic hygge is sitting around the fireplace or around a campfire with people that you care about, maybe drinking, you know, a hot drink of your choice, and just telling stories or playing board games, dimmed lights, just sort of having a cozy atmosphere all around. So it kind of goes hand in hand with friluftsliv. I call it friluftsliv, the sort of the outdoorsy cousin of hygge, because it's very much about creating moments, memories with your family and people you love in a simple and just simple fashion. So the two are very much related, I think.
I think that's why I love it, because if you incorporate those two things, the outdoors and then that for your indoor and outdoor life, but you do have something to kind of embrace even when you're inside.
Yes.
You can love the season. It does not have to be dreaded. It does not have to be depressing. There are, I mean, now that we are living in winters, I tell him that I'm like, I love how, because he asked me again, he's like, all right, we're in our second winter now. He's like, are you tired of this? Are you over the overcast days? And I'm like, you know what? No, because if you can go with a positive mindset and see the beauty in that, you know, this is just a season. And that with these cold and overcast days, when you're outside, you are slightly uncomfortable, but you feel alive and you're invigorated. And then you run into that cozy setting. And then we are with our fire inside, the fireplace is on, and we're doing a read aloud together as a family. And, and you know, I've got the aromas going. And that is very different to me than I'm going to think of that more in my winter season, as opposed to my summer season. Summer season, we're going to just be outside all the time, you know? Which is why I loved bringing that up, because I think that's really important for us.
No, I agree. And I mean, living in a climate like I do now, where it's also dark, pretty dark half the time. Right now, it starts to get dark around 3 o'clock in the afternoon here. So you really have to try and take advantage of that morning light, because the sun barely gets above the horizon these days. And but here's the thing, I would hate for my kids to grow up and think that winter is awful, you know, because that's so many months of the year here.
Yes.
So, you know, you got to find the things that you do appreciate about each season. And we use light a lot here to sort of brighten, since it is so dark, the light becomes even more important to have. You know, we have a lot of, you know, strands of lights in our gardens or in our yards, and also inside with that sort of give this sort of cozy light. We use headlamps to get outside after dark, and, you know, high visibility vests. So yeah, not only is the weather not a hurdle, but darkness shouldn't be either. There are always ways to get around that if you want to get outside. And it's good that you mentioned, you know, living in a hotter climate too, because I get questions about that a lot, because they're like, yeah, of course, you know, you can bundle up and get outside in winter, but what do you do if you if you live in a place where summers are just so hot and humid? It's awful to get outside. But like you said, you know, try to avoid the hottest times of the day. And I always say, you know, try to stay near water, like even if for the kids, if it just means filling up you know, some buckets with water for them to play with, like that can usually keep them pretty occupied in the yard. And you know, ice and whatnot. I think there are always ways around that. And maybe if you live in a climate like that, maybe summer isn't your most active outdoor season. Maybe you're more active in the winter, the cooler months then. So it's just, you just have to, that's part of friluftsliv too. You adapt to the season at hand.
Yep. Absolutely. Which I think we've done good at so far, because we've been streams now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too. I asked her that question about what she thought, because I grew up in New England, and half my life was in overcast, cloudy days, because that's just how it is up there.
Yeah.
And I like it. Like when we lived in Florida, and we've lived in Florida for a good portion of our life at this point, I get sick of the sun beating down on me all the time. Like prayed for like a cloudy day, and it doesn't come very often. So we came up here because I was like, I just can't do this anymore. Like, I really want to get up to we have some seasons. And there were some great parts about Florida, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But somebody who's not used to that.
Yeah.
And is used to the straight shot of vitamin D, like all year long, it can get you down. I get it. Right. Because after the winter grinds on for several months, you're just like, you know, a sunny day would be okay at this point. I wouldn't mind a little bit of sun. But it's important to, like you say, and in the short days too, that can really get to you too. Florida, it was even in the winter, the sun's still out. Like, we would call my mother up in Massachusetts area, and we'd be on Zoom, and her window would be pitch black, and ours, the sun would still be shining through. And I forget how short the days are in parts of the world, even parts of the United States. But we do the same thing. We'll send our kids out with flashlights, and they'll be playing up till 6-7 o'clock at night, but they have to use the flashlights to go out there.
Right.
And at first they're going to complain, and if they're not used to it, you know, if they're not used to doing that. But what we did, which is what I think from what I, you know, from your book, every time you took your kids out, they weren't excited and elated that they were going out in the cold or going to do some activity.
I do stress that, you know, whenever people ask me, you know, so how do you do it? How do you get started? And I said, well, just start by making it a habit. Set a goal, like even if it's ever so little, you know, if it's 15 minutes per day, then start with that and then just work your way up. It is really important that the kids get into, yeah, the habit of getting outside every day and that they understand that it's important for their health. And, you know, I do try to make it fun for them. But also I'm not always able to be out there and play. Like maybe I have to work on dinner and whatnot. And so I've made it a habit also for them to go outside on their own from a pretty early age, because I want them to be able to play independently so that so they're not always dependent on me to be there. If you can do that, I think that's great.
I listened to an interview with you on it, and you had brought up the nature pyramid graphic, which I didn't even know that the little graphic existed, but it's pretty much what we're saying, in that like the most practical model of how to start incorporating the outdoors, where it was like the base was, daily go in your local area, your backyard or your neighborhood, and then like weekly. So maybe on the weekends, go to like your metro park or a local park, and then you just work your way up where your daily stuff is going to be more practical right there at home. And I thought that was a great example that you brought up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great graphic. I think nearby nature is super important. The stuff that you do on a daily basis, I think that's probably what's going to be, I think that's what's going to make the biggest difference to your kids, like in the long run, in terms of forming those habits. But then by all means, if you can get outside, you know, a little farther on the weekends and on vacations and so forth, I think it's important to have those goals too, to maybe, you know, to take that big camping trip or whatever you choose to do. I think it's good to have those too, for sure. So I think they're, you know, a mix is the best of, you know, both worlds.
I honestly think that the hardest part to getting outside, and even more so in very uncomfortable weather, is for the parent to make the move. So whether it be like you're gonna push your kids outside because you have to go kick dinner, but they haven't been outside all day, you gotta make that push and be like, okay, gear up, go play outside, even if it's just for 20 minutes. You know, that, you know, it's gonna make everybody better. And a lot of the times they just keep playing after that 20 minute mark.
Yeah.
And then the other is that I like to have the goal of at least once a week going to a local park. It's almost always more than once a week, but the goal is to definitely, and even if he's at work, it's even harder for me as a parent to just be like, oh my gosh, I got to get everybody loaded up to go drive like 15, 20 minutes down the road, knowing that I'm going to be freezing. And, but once I make that push every single time, I told them the other day, like, as soon as I get in the car and I'm driving to the park, it's like, I'm so glad we did this. We got out of that house and we're going to go have a change of scenery. And I already know that on the return home, we're going to have that heater blasting and we're going to feel great and be so thankful that we did it. So I think that's the hardest part, is just setting that routine and getting yourself to do it.
Getting out the door. I mean, that's half the battle right there. But I tell you what, I don't think I've ever regretted going outside.
No.
I've had days when I felt like, oh my God, I really have not been outside enough today. But I've never had I don't think I've ever felt like, oh, I was outside too long today. No. So yeah, I just really encourage people to get out there.
So other than your own book, which everybody should read because it's awesome, can you give us a book recommendation that has inspired you that will inspire all of us?
Yeah, well, of course, the mother of books of, you know, about nature connection with children is Richard Louv's Last Child in the Woods. I'm sure you read it, I assume.
Or that's on our list.
It's on our
list.
It's
on your list. Okay.
That's why I was smiling. I was like, after reading the book.
Yeah. It's this seminal work, really. It's inspired me and countless others, I think. It just has a lot of the theoretical, like a lot of the reasoning behind, you know, why this is important. It's a great book. So I recommend everybody really to read it. I also really liked The Nature Fix, which is a newer book by Florence Williams, I think her name is. Also a really good book about, she's a journalist and she puts herself out there. She goes out like hiking in the she goes forest bathing in Japan, and like she puts herself in these different situations and talks about the research, but does it in a very accessible and easy way. So that's one that I've read more recently that I highly recommend.
Awesome.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one, so thank you.
Yeah.
All right, so we ask everybody that we interview a version of this question, but so if you knew that you would lose your ability to communicate tomorrow, what would be one last piece of wisdom that you'd like to leave the world?
Well, I joke with my kids sometimes that they need to put on my tombstone, like there's no such thing as bad weather. No, if I were to think a little deeper than that, no, I would probably say that, you know, that just really encourage people to, you know, give their kids, the gift of nature connection. It's a gift that will give back a thousandfold over not just their childhoods, but, you know, over a lifetime. So,
yeah. Yeah, I can agree more.
Yeah.
So where can our listeners find you?
I have a blog, www.rainorshinemama.com. And that's mama with two M's. And they can find me on Instagram too. That's rainorshinemama. And Facebook, and my book is available from, I think, most bigger book retailers or online places, but definitely Amazon. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Awesome.
We'll be sure to link that in our show notes too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've been mostly active on Instagram lately. I like sharing, you know, little tidbits from everyday life over here in Sweden and what we do outdoors. Today we were outside cooking up some stuff. So
what were you cooking?
We cooked like a noodle and vegetable casserole over the fire. Yeah.
Are you going skiing today?
There is not enough snow here, unfortunately, to go skiing.
Really?
We were up north last week over Christmas and did some skiing, but back down here now where it's all green. So I'm just waiting. No, actually we do have some cross country tracks with man-made snow. So I did that a couple of days ago. No, we do. We have some prepared tracks here. So yeah, you can do that. But outside of those, you're kind of out of luck right now. So
awesome. Well, we hope you get lots of snow.
Thank you.
Thank you so too. Much for joining us. We really, really enjoyed it. It was a pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah. It was a pleasure for me too. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
We want to thank Linda for joining us all the way from Sweden for this amazing conversation and for letting us take some of her precious daylight. She was such a wonderful person to meet, and we hope she gets plenty of snow this winter. We also want to thank all of you for joining us around the campfire, and we hope you come back again next week for another trip around the world. Please take a moment to review us on Apple Podcasts, and if you have any questions or comments, please email us at thehomeschoolprojectpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, let's light a fire they can't put out.